Blog Talk Radio.
Hello. Okay. Okay, I'm not sure.
Sherry.
Are we there?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Oh,
yeah,
good.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. I can hear you.
All right.
Great.
All right.
I think we're live. I think we're live to everybody. Great. Welcome, everyone. This is Darkness is Falling here on planet Earth. I have Dr. James Fetzer here. My name is Sherry Sandor Kelly, but you already knew that. Today, we're going to be talking about psyops and the frenzy of the false flag that is happening all around us. And the think tanks that are working feverishly behind the scenes to create such mass chaos and just high drama. So, Dr. Fetzer, thank you so much for joining me. What are your thoughts? I mean, there's so many things going on. I can't keep everything straight. I can't keep one false flag straight from another, you know?
Well, you know, especially when you have Las Vegas falling so rapidly on the heels of Charlottesville. I mean, Charlottesville was embarrassingly bad. We had a production unfolding in three acts on the Friday night. As I recall, it was the 1st of October. You had a torchlit parade onto the campus of the University of Virginia, where students turned out to protect a statue of Thomas Jefferson, the founder of the university, which is affectionately known as Mr. Jefferson's University. But that was really just an appetizer. That was just to draw attention to Charlottesville so that the events that would unfold the following day would get a great deal of national publicity. One was a peaceful protest for which they had a permit. They were going to go to a statue of Robert E. Lee that was under threat. The mayor of Charlottesville, however, a guy named Siner, who was deeply involved in this entire event, had the Charlottesville police stand down. The governor, Terry McAuliffe, who's a crony of Hillary Clinton, again,
mm-hmm.
deeply complicit in this, you know, had the state police channel the protesters into a confrontation with members of Black Lives Matter and Antifa, who had been bussed in by George Soros. I mean, you begin to get a few of the key elements. It turns out that the protest at the park was a good distance, I'm going to guess a half a mile away from the intersection where the alleged event took place, of a vehicle being driven into a crowd of protesters. However, the whole thing was staged. We had two vehicles. One was a Dodge Challenger with a black stripe. The other didn't. One with a sunroof, the other not. We had two drivers with virtually identical names. One was the patsy, James A. Field, who was 20 years old, diagnosed as schizophrenic on antidepressant medication, wearing heavy prescription glasses. The other was a 32-year-old, James G. Field, who was physically fit, commands a battalion of Army reservists in Ohio, who was actually the driver. But let me tell you about the three takes. The one involved only one vehicle, just a one Dodge Challenger, no other vehicles around it, headed toward the crowd. A second, you see the Dodge Challenger, but there's a black pickup truck beside it. So that's a different take. The third, however, is the piece de resistance. They had a maroon van that was parked at the intersection for 5 minutes with no driver before the event. They brought up another van, white as I recall, also had the driver out before. The stunt guy, this James G. Field, 32-year-old, crashed into the back. Now, they got the drivers out because they didn't want anyone to suffer from whiplash or some kind of neck injury. But when he backed
right?
Yeah, when he backed out, was so precise, so, you know, A NASCAR driver couldn't have done a better job of backing up. I couldn't have backed out at the speed and precision with which he did. We had another guy who was on the ground doing a video stream, and he was capturing where the protesters were, the location of the vehicle at the intersection. He even caught the Dodge Challenger driving around town, and we suspect that this was a form of coordination because his broadcast was available, that people who are participants knew everything that was going on, how to make it work out right. But the whole thing was a complete and total sham. The effects of it absolutely stunning. I mean, we had a former member of the executive council for the Black Congressional Caucus, Sherry, call for all monuments to George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, and Robert E. Lee to be taken down, for God's sake. That would include the Jefferson Memorial in Washington, D.C., and the Washington Monument. I mean, this is insanity.
It is. It's insanity. I mean they left out Horace Greeley. I mean, for God's sakes, Horace Greeley was editor of the Greeley Tribune. He lived in Chappaqua. He was a Quaker. That's the town where Hillary Clinton lived. That's my hometown, where I grew up. Now she ruined it. But the thing is, the elements of these are so stunning. It's so reminiscent of 9/11, of Mohammed Atta and the plane, the fake plane that flew in. Nobody fly. Nobody can do that. You know, the witnesses, the outrage. But what stuns me is that the level of cognitive disconnect of – I got this from the guy from BAI yesterday. He was talking to Dan Whittington. But the cognitive disconnect of people, they're so gullible, and it's working so well, right?
They want to believe the authorities, Sherry. So much of their sense of security and well-being is dependent upon the belief that the government is there, is benevolent and out to protect. The idea that an American administration like the Bush-Cheney would abuse their position to bring about the death of an estimated 3,000 Americans to promote a political agenda is something they find incomprehensible. It's on the order of the woman who finds signs that her husband has been molesting their daughter. She's unable to confront it. She suppresses it. Later, when the truth eventually emerges, she's unable to explain why she did nothing about it. It's well known as cognitive dissonance when some evidence occurs that's inconsistent with your core beliefs. You suppress, ignore, or discard it, and that's what's happening here.
You don't want to believe it because your set of rules or your set of mindset would be so violated that you don't want to do that. You can't.
It's just too threatening to your sense of well-being and, you know, your conception of the world.
But everyone's running to get their finger scans. They're all ready to get their, you know, the biometrics getting. Oh no, please, give my kid a retina scan. Yeah, I want that. I want a card. I want them to be in the database. I want to get scanned in the airport. I want to get radiation. I want to have this. I want to have a smartwatch. I want to, you know. It's not even like they're willing participants, you know. They get their hands behind their back and they're just all going off the mountain, going boop, okay, next one, right?
It's pretty embarrassing. In Charlottesville, further proof that this was a staged event. The first witness, who happened to be a key witness, turns out to have been with the State Department in Africa. He's a CIA agent. He's the chief of staff for a gubernatorial candidate to whom George Soros has given some $30,000 in campaign contributions. I mean, the two guys who were supposed to be leading the protest movement, Kessler and the other name will come to me, were agents provocateur. One of them graduated from an elite prep school in Dallas and then went to Duke. I mean, this is not a guy who's going to turn out to be, some kind of right-wing extremist. There's even a photograph of him and his wife with Laura Bush, of all people. And the other guy turned out to have been an Obama supporter. I mean, he was part of the protest movement, you know, Occupy Wall Street. But when Trump became elected, he had a conversion. This was so he could become a sleeper in these movements, you know, and lead them into protest. Well, one of them, the Kessler guy, as I recall, would be use German expressions and talk about Hail Trump and all this to create the false impression that this is a white supremacist organization. I mean, look how cleverly, and this was the psyop that was taking place here, Sherry. They move from Trump being an American first guy who wants to reallocate the resources we're expending on these wars in the Middle East for the benefit of Israel, which was the whole objective of 9/11, to induce the United States into entering these wars, where Wesley Clark eventually outlined the program at the Commonwealth Club in San Francisco in 2007 to take out the governments of seven countries in the next 5 years, beginning with Iraq and Libya.
Jump back 5 years. Go to Paul Wellstone. Let's go, Senator. Let's go to his. He was the guy that was opposing the Iraq war.
Yeah, that's all true too, of course. But you know, let me finish my thought here. So we had, you know, the ending with beginning with Iraq and Libya, but ending with Syria and Iran, which of course is not Arab, a Persian nation. But they've been defeated in Syria. And I think that this has really pissed off Bibi Netanyahu, who is the brains behind 9/11. He's under threat for investigation. Now this is more speculative. What I'm telling you, I can prove everything I'm telling you. The evidence here is more circumstantial and indirect, but I believe that Israel has declared war on the United States, that a number of very peculiar events have taken place that are manifestations, including the collisions of American warships off the coast of Japan with these large lumbering cargo ships. These warships are very sophisticated electronically, Sherry. They have the ability to know everything in the air, on the water, beneath the water, 24/7.
Yeah.
There's no possible way they could have been hit by these cargo ships unless they'd been taken control, somehow deceived, perhaps by manipulating GPS, by some external authority. The hurricanes that we've undergone have been identified by multiple experts, including James McCanny, as having been man-made and controlled by lasers located in space. So they devastate Houston's major oil center, 50 inches of rain, completely unprecedented, destroy Puerto Rico and parts of Florida. For whatever reason, they weren't as devastating to the rest of the state. Anyone who thinks that Israel doesn't have the money for this kind of high-tech operation is deluding themselves. The day before 9/11, Donald Rumsfeld announced that the $2.3 trillion was missing from the Pentagon budget. And the controller, the chief financial officer at the time, was Dov Zakheim, who not only a dual U.S.-Israeli citizen, but a rabbi, and who has a company that specializes in remote control systems to take control of aircraft were they to be hijacked. I think the original plan was to fly remotely controlled aircraft using his company's systems into the Twin Towers until they discovered that the robust structure of the towers, with each floor representing a steel truss filled with 4 to 8 inches of concrete, 208 feet on a side, meaning each floor represented an acre of concrete on a steel truss connected at one end to the massive core columns, at the other to the external steel support columns, which were quite formidable in and of themselves, meant that an aluminum aircraft would crumple external to the building, fall to the ground, body seats, luggage. In fact, what they had to do was to fake it, so that I've done a huge amount of research on the aircraft on 9/11. It turns out two of them were not even in the air, 11 and 77, 11 North Tower, 77 the Pentagon. The other two pilots for 9/11 Truth were able to determine, based upon air-ground communications, that Flight 93 was over Champaign-Urbana after it had allegedly crashed in Shanksville, that Flight 175 was over Harrisburg and Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, long after it had allegedly hit the South Tower, and where I obtained FAA registration records that showed that the planes used for those two flights, where the same plane can be used for different flights today, Chicago to Dallas, tomorrow LA to New York, and so forth, were not deregistered or formally taken out of service until 28 September 2005. So how can planes that weren't even in the air have crashed on 9/11? How can planes that crashed on 9/11 have even been in the air, have still been in the air 4 years later? It turns out that David Ray Griffin, in his magisterial, the 9/11 Commission report, Omissions and Distortions, makes as his very first point that a half a dozen or more of the alleged suicide hijackers turned up alive and well the following day. Well, if you think about it, if the hijackers were alive the following day, that means the planes didn't crash, none of the passengers died, there was no hijacking, the whole thing was a scam, which means that the entire war on terror is predicated upon a false premise.
Indeed. Yeah, indeed. I mean, it's no surprise. I mean, the facts don't lie. I mean, WikiLeaks, they published the pager intercepts back in 2010. Or 2008, I think I was 2 years late because I just woke up then. But I believe I sent you the pager intercept, or maybe I didn't, I just mentioned it. I think it was about 6:38 in the morning that the azimuth positioning system was turned off at Dulles International Airport. And as you know, the azimuth positioning system satellite is the one that controls the GPS. It's the one that is the one where it the in-flight instruments. It's what they blamed on the Wellstone crash. It's what they blamed on the JFK Jr. crash, that they turned off the satellite so the planes didn't know what was happening, and so nobody else knew what was happening. That's a fact. That's not a theory. That's one thing. But I don't know how it came.
I've done a lot of work on Wellstone, less on John, but they manipulated the GPS to draw the plane into the kill zone, actually Eveleth, Virginia Airport, which is just 60 miles north of where I was then teaching on the Duluth campus of the University of Minnesota, is a user-friendly airport. It just doesn't have any accidents happening, but they manipulated the GPS to bring them in about 2 miles south of the airport into an electromagnetic field that popped all the computerized components on the plane, including the stall warning, the communication, the navigation. In fact, it flipped the solenoids that control the pitch of the props, so that after the crash, when a study was done by an independent firm, they discovered the props were set at below idle. Of course, no plane can remain in the air at below idle. The fuselage burned for 7 hours. They couldn't put it out. It appears to have been prepped to destroy the evidence, because if they'd been able to recover any of those systems, they would have seen what had actually caused the crash. There was a white van in the area that apparently was the team that took down the plane using an electromagnetic weapon, hightailing out of the area at high speed. That just doesn't happen. That's a remote rural area, and we have witnesses who watched its departure. It turns out that Raytheon owns Beechcraft, which makes the King Air A100. It's like the Rolls Royce of small aircraft, in which Wellstone was being flown, and where I attribute this to a small-scale conspiracy involving Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld, and Karl Rove. All it would take would be a phone call to Raytheon to find out what would take down the plane and to dispatch a team. But Dick Cheney had personally threatened Wellstone that if he opposed them on Iraq, that there would be severe ramifications for him personally and for the state of Minnesota, and he followed through on his threat.
No, he pulled a Debbie Wasserman Schultz, I guess. You know, it's really weird that this plane crash, it reminds me of the plane crash of President Harabinyama, and I don't think I'm pronouncing it right, the Rwandan president. His plane was shot down by Rwandan forces, by Paul Kagame, who's best friends with Bill Clinton and Tony Blair. Right? And then the whole thing, then the whole genocide started with 100,000 or, I don't know, a million people in three months. The numbers were fudged. There were more killings than there was more murders than they said. But this reminds me of that crash. What do you think? Are you familiar with that?
Well, I don't know. I don't know the details of that crash. However, I published a book about Paul Wellstone's crash. I was among the first serious students. I actually published 10 articles about it in an alternative newspaper in Duluth. I was on Coast to Coast one of the five times I was featured there before in 2008, I began talking about Israeli complicity in 9/11, after which they haven't brought me back on the show. But I, you know, I've also done an, you can find online a presentation before my retirement in June of 2006. I did a three-parter in November where I did an hour on JFK, an hour on 9/11, an hour on Wellstone. And you can find the all three are online, but the hour on Wellstone you can find under the Senator Wellstone Assassination. The book is entitled American Assassination, co-authored with Don Four Arrows Jacobs, who is a Native American scholar, then with Northern Arizona University. And it's been endorsed by a number of prominent figures, including David Ray Griffin. If you go to Michael Rupert's From the Wilderness newsletter, they published a piece, a short piece I did with John P. Costella, Ph.D., who's another physicist, this time with a specialty in electromagnetism, who is crucial in our figuring out how it was done, who made contributions to the book, but where I flew John up from Australia, and we tromped around in the snow in 35 below zero weather, picking up pieces of the charred wreckage of the Wellstone aircraft. And oh, you can find that co-authored article entitled The NTSB Failed Wellstone on the From the Wilderness newsletter, where it's preceded by four reviews of the book. So you can see what the book entailed, where I lay out really systematically going through the evidence, how we're forced to conclude that it was done in a certain way. Garage doors were opening spontaneously. There were cell phone anomalies, multiple indications of how this was done, and, you know, devastating.
Yeah.
Americans need to wake up. Even the Wellstone family has been unable to bring themselves to acknowledge it was an assassination and not an accident.
Yeah, the sons that were left alive, I mean, they have the foundation, but I don't know. Maybe they were bribed. Who knows? You know, I don't know. I can't speculate on that. But I do know that Paul Wellstone.
I don't imagine were bribed, Jerry. I just think it was probably another case of cognitive dissonance. The very idea he could have been assassinated was just too threatening to them, so they've suppressed it, discarded,
right,
or ignored.
Right, right. Psychological trauma. I mean, PTSD. But they just like they snuffed out John Fitzgerald Kennedy, because he was a true patriot, a true Democrat who wanted, you know, information to be free. He wanted to abolish the CIA. He wanted to get rid of the Fed Reserve. He was a threat, just like Wellstone was a threat. You know, politics were not for the politicians. They were for the people.
Yeah.
You know, to make this country better. And
I've just published a new book, JFK, Who, How, and Why, with Moonrock Books, where I brought together 15 experts to update. I had previously published three collections of expert studies, Assassination Science, 1998, Murder in Dealey Plaza, 2000, The Great Zapruder Film Hoax, 2003. Even Vincent Gugliosi, who published Reclaiming History as a 1,500-page defense of the Warren Commission, acknowledges, albeit grudgingly, that mine are the only exclusively scientific books ever published on the assassination. But Vince, I think, was paid handsomely to produce a volume defending, because of his reputation as such a diligent prosecutor, where he convicted, Charles Manson of the murder of the LaBiancas and Tates and all that. I mean, it was a really nasty piece of work, apparently attempting to precipitate a race war between blacks and whites, where he believed that the blacks were stronger but dumber and would prevail in the war. Then Charlie and his crew would emerge from the mountains to become the leaders of the world. It was that level of dementia.
Right. And so, well, Sharon Tate, wasn't she wasn't, was it Roman Polanski's child she was pregnant with? Am I correct in that?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, it's amazing the thought that goes into all this, the psychological dealings that these think tanks ran, Brookings, Athens Institute, Arling Institute, The Office of Naval Research, I mean, National Reconnaissance Office. I mean, it's got all these things, these groups, these agencies, and they, you know, the DIA, the DNA. I mean, it's confusing. I mean, I can't keep up with how many defense intelligence agencies they have with the false flags. I don't know how you keep up with it. You know, I don't know how you do all the work you do. You know, I do know that the American people have to wake up. It's not the American people. We are the sleeping giant, but the world has to wake up because it's fast coming. It's a fast pace now, and they're ramping it up. Yeah. And in between the Charlottesville and Las Vegas, wasn't there a shooting in France? Didn't they? Was it like two women shot in the train? Didn't they? They tried to get drum up some attention from that, like do another Charlie Hebdo or something. And when no one was like, oh, we don't really care about that, they're like, oh, let's go for Las Vegas. But I don't know. Las Vegas is very shady. I mean, it's weird. I mean, you know, I mean, Paddock and the arms deal and, you know, ISIS Antifa, you know, he's ISIS Antifa. No, he's not. They don't know which lie to go on. They don't know which theme to work with. But we do know that Hillary Clinton, diversion from Hillary Clinton, the FBI and Comey and Imran Awan and Pakistani spy ring. And, you know, and it's just crazy. And people just look the other way. They're like, oh, that happened yesterday. We don't know about it, you know?
Well, regarding false flags in Europe, we have a new book entitled Chronicles of False Flag Terror, A European Perspective by Nick Kohlerstrom, PhD. He's a historian of science. He cracked the London 7/7 subway bombing case by discovering that the four young lads who apparently had been induced to participate in what they were told was a drill had been unable to reach the site of the subway stops in time before the explosives went off because the train from Luton they had to take to get into London had been canceled that day. So they weren't even there. In fact, it turns out that the explosions, which were supposed to be from backpacks inside the carriages, would have blown the metal down and out, but instead it's blown up and in, meaning the explosives were underneath the carriages rather than inside them. His book, Terror on the Tube, is now in its third edition, where you can find a one-hour A to Z on the London subway bombing in the 7/7 ripple effect. This is a YouTube video by Maud Dibb, who was actually arrested by the
Maud
government
D.
when they were trying to...
We'll continue this conversation if you'll join me tomorrow for another installment of the False Flag Frenzy. Sound good, Dr. Fetzer?
Sure. Oh, yes. Sure.
Great.
Thanks.
I'm so pleased. No, thank you. I'm sorry to cut it short. It's my first show. I'm a virgin. You were very gentle. I like
it
very much. Thank you.
You got it.
All right, sweetheart.
Good luck.
We'll see you tomorrow
then.
Thank you, honey. Bye-bye.